you don't know very many Jewish people named Alexander.
But how many last names? Tons of Alexander, Jewish Alexander.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's what that is.
So I'll tell you the story of it. So let me just start by saying it's October. It's not. I didn't change the date. It's November 12th, and I wrote down, I changed it on the top at home, the 20th. What is it? The 27th, I think, of Heshvan. We're using last week's sheet.
Yeah.
Whoever wasn't here, I have some extras.
I forgot we didn't do that sheet. So
we just did the back.
I thought we ended there.
We just did the back.
We didn't.
So I have the extra sheets.
Okay.
Do you have one?
No.
Okay, so why is Alexander a Jewish name? So it was a specific deal made with Alexander the Great. So when Alexander the Great was busy conquering the world, he had dreams of a majestic person in a white robe coming to him, greeting him as he came into the Holy Land. And he kept these dreams private. He's Alexander the Great. He's conquering everything, but he saw that he's not going to conquer, apparently. This is the story in the Gemara. When he gets to outside of Jerusalem, Shimon HaTzadik, who's in charge at the time, greets him, and Alexander the Great recognizes him, gets off his horse, and bows down to him. Right. This is the story in the Gemara. Yeah. This is the story in the Gemara. Okay. So who knows exactly? But the point is, they met and they talked rather than fought.
Uh-huh.
And the whole point of Alexander's conquering the world is to make his name great. He's Alexander the Great. Right. So Shimon HaTzadik said, "Don't conquer us. We're the eternal people. I'll make your name great. We'll make it a Jewish name. We'll name our children after you, and your name will last, because we are the eternal people." So he agreed to trade conquering for his name being great through the Jews. So not only is his name used as a Jewish name today, and it is a Jewish name, Sender is Alexander.
Oh, yeah, right. You're right. Okay.
It's a Jewish
name
today, right? Came from that.
No, I never thought of that either.
Yeah. So as a Jewish name, Alexander is now a Jewish name because of that encounter. And also, we count, there are some documents that we count time from there. So we
from
now
meeting.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Now from the agreement.
Okay,
so it must be
right.
Yeah, from the agreement. So and you can see some older documents. There are some documents in that they found, I think, in the Cairo Geniza that are dated from that. There's different dating styles. Mm-hmm. So some kintubas that would be dated that way. Yeah, so there's a minyan, and I forgot what it's called. Minyan means counting up. It's a minyan, so there has to be a name that goes at the end of it. Minyan something, right? So we count like minyan briyasa olam. We're counting our 5773 is from the creation of the world, right? Really from Adam getting a soul. But so there's different counts, but there's a special count from that agreement so that that also memorializes him by counting time from him. So we have that in some Jewish documents. Yeah. We don't do that now, but I think even some, I mean, it was a commitment that we made. So I think, I don't know if there's anything still counted that way, but there might be in order to honor that. I'm just saying, look, maybe some documents in some countries are still counted that way. I don't know, but we definitely have record of documents. We have evidence of documents that are counted that way.
So it sounds like the story probably has some firm validity.
Yeah, no, for sure. Something happens.
Right,
that's what I'm saying.
Right,
these stories, who knows about the dreams and about all that stuff, but for sure there was a meeting. For sure there wasn't the conquering.
So,
and for sure we have, and for sure we have the posterity commitment in the name and in the counting. Right. So definitely something happened there. There's definitely diplomacy and an agreement made.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so now on to our subject of the day. We're back into Sefer Chinuch. And so we're going to do 279 to 284. We last week went through the definition of all these terms.
That's as far as we got.
Right, I thought that would be like the first 10 minutes and it turned out to take longer. So that's good. It's good because it's good to review all that stuff. So so those of you who were not here last week, so you'll just have to bear with us. You could, there's lots of different, I'll just buzz. I'm going to... It wasn't last week. I mean the week before. Last time we had class.
Right. You thought you missed something there.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah. I was sitting thinking.
I knew she kept saying last week and meant 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, last time. Right. I'm just going to buzz through. Let's flip the sheet over. I'll buzz through these words very quickly for a quick review. I'm not going to go through everything, but just so that we have the vocabulary for what we're doing now. Okay, so what we talked about was Trumot and Masrot last week. Trumas and Miseros, you might hear it, but Trumot and Masrot is how we're going to pronounce it here. So that is the tithes that we separate from produce in the land of Israel, anything that's grown in the land of Israel, and we separate them still today. It's not dependent on temple times. How we deal with them is dependent on temple times, but whether we separate them is not. So any produce grown in the land of Israel has to have Trumot and Masrot separated from it. So we talked about different types of count, where we count from. We're not going to go there. So let's go down to four lines. Tevil, the vocabulary word tevil. Tevil means it has not been separated from. That's just any produce from which the tithes have not been separated is called tevil. Any produce which you're not sure if they took the tithes from it is called demai. Now the tithes, these are the tithes, the five tithes. Truma, or also called truma gedola. That is taking off, let's see if I remember all this right, that's taking off any amount from the top of the pile. So we said that really 1/50th is the amount that's not required. And to be generous, you take off, I always forget my fractions.
Yeah, 1/60th.
Oh, average is 1/50th. 1/40th is more generous, and 1/60th is less generous. Right. That's why I just wanted to go that way, get a little dyslexic with the numbers, right? But it's just any amount. Right? So you have to take that off. That goes to the Kohen. So that's what I give to the Kohen from my pile. Then I take off Ma'aser Rishon. That's 1/10. So the first Rishon means first. The first tenth I separate. So first I took off something. Give that to the Kohen. Then I take off 1/10. I give that to the Levite. Then there's Trumat Ma'aser. So now the Levite has my 10%. And he takes off something and he gives that. He takes 1/10 of his 10th. And gives it to the Kohen. Right? Then there's Maaser Sheni. Back to my pile. I now re-tithe.
Hold on.
Right. This is the whole class last week. I now re-take off 10% from my 90% that's left. My 89% that's left over. Right? From what I had initially. I now take off 10% again. That's called Maaser Sheni. Depending on the year. So the second Maaser. Or it's Maaser Ani, depending on the year. So here I have listed on the sheet, it's in years of the Shemitah cycle. Which
is that from ours or from the...
From ours. So in the Shemitah cycle, there's 7 years. So in year 1, 2, 4, and 5, it's called Maaser Sheni. And in years 3 and 6, it's called Maaser Ani. And of course, in year 7, where we're not permitted to, you know, take... Yeah, we're not permitted to cultivate our land or harvest for ourselves on the Shemitah year. So then there's no Maaser. I'm not sure what the halacha is. Let's say you are allowed to eat the Shemitah produce. You don't have to let it rot on the trees, but it has Kedusha. You can't sell it, and you can't own it.
So, but you could eat it for yourself.
You can go in the orchard and take it yourself, right? You can go in the orchard and take some home for yourself. What they do in the land of Israel today is they'll harvest oranges. I mean, there's things that grow without you tending to it. Not so cucumbers are hard, tomatoes are hard, but oranges and apples
grow every year.
So what do? You don't just let them rot on the tree. I guess you could, but you don't have to. You pick them, but they're hefker. They don't belong to the field owner. They belong to whoever wants them. So they bring bags of it into the city, and you can just take it. But you can't throw any of it away. It has Kedusha. So you peel the orange, you eat the orange, and now you have seeds and peels.
And you have to treat
it. You have to save it until it rots. And then it's garbage. And then you can throw it away. But you can't. It's not garbage until it's spoiled.
Bad.
So date pits, for instance, turns out those don't rot. So
so they are piles of date pits.
Yeah, yeah. So you do, like, that kind of thing. You have to save it. So in an Israeli kitchen in the Shemitah year, they'll have what they call the Pach Shemitah. All the stuff that is, it's the Shemitah can, right? So all the leftover stuff, all the peelings and all the pits and all the everything from Shemitah produce that has Kedusha, it can't go in the regular garbage. I'm not sure what they do
so
with all of it.
You put it in a composting pile.
Maybe.
Well, because that doesn't do anything to it. It just allows it to...
Yeah, but then
away.
What happens with the Kedusha of it? Does that make the whole thing Kadosh and that's a problem for a lot of use? I don't know.
So
I don't know all the halachas. These are
never that easy.
No,
right.
Probably not. I thought it was a good solution to put it on a composting pile and give it back in the land.
Who we give that to?
Right. Maaser Sheni, the 10% is given to us, but we have to eat it in Kedusha in Yerushalayim.
Okay.
So all of this only really has to do with...
We still have to separate it today, but we can't do the right things with all of it today. So anything that has to be eaten in Kedusha, anything that goes to the Kohen, we now today give, it can go to Kohanic animals, which can never be in Tahara. Okay. Right, we'll see. So that goes to the Biblical Zoo, which is owned by Kohanim. And then anything that we have to eat ourselves, we redeem on a coin and give to tzedakah.
Okay, and can you go over Maaser Ani again?
And Maaser Ani is, we would be given to the poor.
Okay.
The same thing happens.
So 10%?
Yeah, the same 10%. Same 10% of what's left, so it's like really 8.9% of the whole pile in the end.
But all of this has to do with grown food that's actually grown,
food that's grown
in
the land of Israel, which applies to us here in America. If you go to King Supers and you see Jaffa oranges, you have to find out if it was separated or not before they sent it to Chutz La'aretz, before they sent it out of the land of Israel.
Will they know it at King Supers? Probably.
No, but Rabbi Heiser will know.
Oh, okay.
And then you either separate it or don't buy it or whatever. You have to figure it out. But Israeli produce, you have to know. So you'll see it on cans of pickles and olives in the deli on the side. Usually it's in Hebrew, but sometimes it's in English. It will say Trumot and Masorot have been separated. So it's just part of the Hechsher, you know. So or it will say not Shemitah produce.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just going
to So that's why you'll just want to know all that stuff. Okay, let's go now. Mitzvah 279, that ritually unclean Kohen is forbidden to eat truma, right? So in the Hebrew, Shelo Yochal, right, Shelo Yochal Kohen Tamei Truma. So now we know what truma is. And just so you know, this is for your trivia knowledge, not trivia, but for your expanded knowledge, your literacy knowledge. The first question in the Gemara, in Gemara Brachos, is, and how the whole Gemara opens up, the entire Gemara, is, from when do the Kohanim go in to eat their truma? And the answer is...
From when?
Yeah, me'ematai. The first word is me'ematai. Me'ematai. From when do the Kohanim, like from what time do the Kohanim go in to eat their truma? And the answer is from when you read Kriyat Shema in the evening. Right, so I use that. It's a classic. That's how the whole Gemara starts. I use this question and answer just to show people that, yes, it's written down, and no, you can't understand it without a teacher. It is still the oral law. Unless you know what a Kohen is, unless you know what Truma is, unless you know under which conditions it can be eaten, you can't understand the question.
From the time they read which?
And unless you know what Kriyat Shema is, okay, and unless you know how to calculate what evening is, you can't understand the answer. Right? So... from when do the Kohanim go in to eat their truma? From when you read Kriyat Shema in the evening? That's the question, that's the answer.
So we did study that. Is that like the third watch? You know, it's divided into...
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. That's right. Right. Yes, excellent. So the question is, all right, so here it is, when can the Kohen go in? So let's say the Kohen was cleaning his house and he found a mouse, a dead mouse, right? Or he killed the mouse. He's tummy. How long is he tummy? Right? He cannot eat truma if he's tummy. So that kind, lighter kinds of tuma, and again, there's so much halacha in tuma and tahara, but lighter kinds of tuma last for the day until the sun sets. You have to go to the mikvah. You're still tame until the sun sets. We have that a little bit today. I don't think the east side mikvah does it, but the west side mikvah does. It's interesting. You could tell me if the east side one does it, but occasionally on the west side, if somebody lives further away, they're supposed to go Friday night. They'll go Friday day. And then wait till Friday night to touch their husbands.
Yes, it's fairly routine.
Oh, you do that on the east side? Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
But not without a rabbi.
Of course, right.
So the rabbi has to say, this is what we're...
Right, right. So that is a halacha, right? So you would wonder, like, how does that work? How do you... And I don't know how it works, spiritually how that works, but it does work that you go to the mikvah during the day, but you're still tummy... Until the sun sets, and then the mikvah works.
Magic.
But that's what's happening here, right? So that...
Well, it's not... I don't think that it's... if in this, in that case, because the woman has already had 7 clean days...
She's going on the 7th day.
Right. But she's already... So she's already checked to make sure that she's that she's clean.
Right.
Okay? She goes. The idea is...
right? Because she's going at the end of that seventh day, still on the seventh day. It's not the completion. But you have to wait till the completion
of the day,
of the day, plus the mikvah. So it's interesting that you could go to the mikvah.
Order is wrong.
Yeah. Like, I just wonder, I don't know, but it would make me curious. If you can go before the completion of the time, when can you go before the completion of the time? What if you're going on a business trip and you need to go on the sixth day? You know, I've never heard of such a thing, but I'm saying, like, if there's such a thing, then you have to ask, from when does that such a thing exist?
Yeah, I don't
know the answer to that.
As far as I know,
yeah. I mean, I've never heard of a six-day dip.
No.
I'm just curious, like, how far back does that go?
Yeah, from my experience.
Only the seventh day, right?
It's only the seventh day. And,
Well, let's say somebody's getting on a plane to Australia.
For example.
Yeah, and they're going to meet their husband when they land. But they're leaving on the sixth day. I'm just curious. Like, I don't know. It's a Shiloh,
well,
but
and then,
just like, when
and
does
then
it start?
And then you lose a day. And so then
right, that's very confusing. Yeah, yeah.
Turn around and get back with us.
It's just interesting, like, because if it exists, there is a line. That's what I'm saying. There's a line before which it doesn't exist and after which it does exist. So the question, I'm just wondering, where is that line? Right. I don't know the answer to that question.
I think that because the days of importance in that particular mitzvah are the first day and the last day, and she is clean on the last day, the idea is more about offense with respect to intimacy than it is about the halacha of the seventh day.
I don't think so.
No?
Well, it'd be interesting to check out. Anyway, the point is it applies here too. So a kohen that first mitzvah is a kohen that's tamei cannot eat it. Now it's interesting here that the halacha comes from the pasuk. We'll just look in the English. Everyone of the progeny of Aaron. See in the Hebrew, ish ish, right? So it's ish ish in Hebrew. Ish ish mizera Aaron, right? So so here it's translated everyone. Ish ish everyone. From the progeny of Aaron shall not eat of the holy things until he is clean. But here it could say she, he, because this does not just apply to men. Female kohanim can also eat truma, but not if they're tamei. So it can only be eaten in tara. So we learn that from the ish ish. This applies to all the seed of Aaron, not just the males, not just those who can be in service of the Beit HaMikdash. So you could even have a mum or whatever it is, but if you're tamei, you can't eat the truma. Right, so that's the first one, 279. Tamei, that you can't eat it. Let's see, we'll just look among the bottom of the page. Among the laws of the precept, there's what the sages of blessed memory taught, that if a defiled kohen eats ritually pure truma, he incurs death and receives whiplashes for it.
Now, wait a minute, in which order?
I think you get heavenly death and earthly whiplashes.
I see.
But if he thus ate the defiled truma, even though it's forbidden by an injunction, he receives no whiplashes because it was not hallowed. So you could have truma that became tamei, right? Mm. So I separate off my truma, and I have it in a pile in the granary. And in comes Grandpa to make sure I separate it right, and he dies, right? Now the whole granary has tumat mate. So even though my truma was separated properly, it's now tamei, right? So a tamei kohen, I think, still is. It says here he doesn't get death, but he still gets whiplashes because it's tamei.
But
who's allowed to eat that?
Defiled, he receives. No, it says he receives no whiplashes.
I thought he is allowed to eat it.
Even though it is forbidden by an injunction, he receives
no whiplashes. Okay, because it's not held. Right. Because somewhere I thought he was permitted that a tamei kohen could eat tamei truma, but here it's saying no.
It says
you just don't get punished. It's forbidden by an injunction, right?
But does he still receive heavenly death or no?
No.
Nothing bad happens. He just can't eat it.
Right. So then there is what they said, that defiled kohanim are to eat truma when the sun goes down and they see three medium-sized stars in the sky. This is the time being about a third of an hour after the sunset. So that's when they become tahor. Right? We have further what the sages of blessed memory say about one who is eating truma and his limbs quiver to emit semen. Right? So now he becomes tamei, a different kind of truma, or camel riders, and I'm not sure what's about camel riders. So there's all kinds of different things. So it's the same. There's all kinds of different situations where you might be tahor, start eating it, and become tamei. Then what? Right? So there's all kinds of laws. This is among the laws. So he just says, look in the laws of ritual uncleanness in Mitzvah 159, where he mentions things both generally and in detail. So it applies to Kohanim, both male and female, in the land of Israel, at the time that it is inhabited, a settled state. For then there's the obligation of Truma by the law of the Torah and the view of the Rambam of blessed memory. Right? So we don't, nobody eats Truma. No humans eat Truma today, legally. I mean, on purpose, whatever. I'm sure there's somebody who does, so I don't want to say there's nobody who does. But we don't have the mitzvahs. We're not observing this. No Kohen who is given the Truma will eat it today because you can't become Tahor today. So everybody's Tame, nobody eats it, but you can give it to a Kohen animal. So that's what we do with it. We don't throw it out.
Give it to a Kohen's animal?
Yes, a Kohen animal
a
can
Kohen
eat.
Kohen animal, not a Kohen's Kohen animal.
So no, a Kohen's animal.
A Kohen's animal. So are all animals owned by Kohanim?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jackson would be a Kohen, if we were a Kohen.
Is your husband a Kohen?
No.
All right, okay.
She said if.
Your husband's a Kohen, so your dog could eat Truma. But your husband and you can't, right?
That's funny. So now when they're talking about all... that all ignoramuses are firmly assumed to be in a state of ritual.
Yes, that's us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wow. Am
Ha'aretz, right? So okay. we've just mentioned that title before. Am Ha'aretz means ignoramus, but it's so today we just use it for anybody who's unlearned.
Okay.
Right, but its specific meaning is somebody who is unlearned in the laws of Tuma and Tahara. So if you don't know the laws of Tuma and Tahara, just think about Shabbos. Let's say somebody says, I keep Shabbos. And then you say, how many Av Malachas are there? And they say, I don't know what an Av Malacha is. So if you say, how many major categories of work are there from which you must refrain on Shabbos? And they say, major categories? What do you mean category? You just can't work on Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Right? Once they start to show you how ignorant they are, you know they're not Shomer Shabbos. They can't be Shomer Shabbos unless they know the Halacha.
Okay.
Right? So you, if somebody doesn't know the Halacha of Tumantara, you assume they are Tamei. Because they don't know enough to stay away from things that are tame. They don't even know what the stuff is. Can you touch the dead mouse? Can you go into the building? Can you sit on that chair? They don't know those halachas. So you just assume they're tame. So that's all of us
so
today.
So what if you find a dead mouse on Shabbos?
Consult your LOR, as they say. Local Orthodox rabbi.
You can touch the mouse, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So
that's
not like just
that's
being
part
the
of the halacha, right?
Not like just like being some, present.
Right. In some cases, you have to actually touch it. So it really totally depends. Like, do you have to physically touch it? What if you touch something that's touching it? Right. So let's say you're moving a dead body, and you're not touching the body, but you're just touching the
cloth,
the litter right. of the body. You still become tamei mate from touching the thing that's touching it. Right. Even I think. If you, let's say there's a litter there, and you take a stick and push the litter, so that your stick that you're holding is pushing the thing that's touching that, you still become tummy from that. Right, so there's all kinds of...
Pick up the mouse with something.
Right, I think if you pick up the mouse with something, right, right. Or if you use your dustpan and a broom and you're holding the dustpan, that does not make you tummy.
It does not.
Right. No.
So even if you're non...
So it doesn't transfer.
Even if your non-shedding dog goes and eats that mouse that's on the floor...
Non-shedding dog. Okay.
That's for the halachas of Tumantara.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I like to meet a non-shedding dog.
There's very few of those.
Right, okay. Mitzvah 280.
Okay.
That any, and I spelled it wrong here on the sheet, we're flipping the sheet back over, and I just dyslexized that nay and every, and I couldn't figure out what that was, that any and every non-Kohen is forbidden to eat Truma. Right, so that's all of us. Doesn't matter what your status is. If you're not a Kohen, you can't eat Truma, period. End of discussion. There's no reason that would make it so that you can eat it no matter what you've achieved. Right, so there's no... The precept's root purpose is given in the previous precept, 279. It is one of the high favors of holiness that the ministering servants of the Lord should eat it along with their wives and children, and their... So this is, I don't understand all the halachas. And they're non-Jewish slaves whom they bought for themselves, and they should give it to their domestic beasts and all their livestock, but not to others. So their household that belongs to them can eat it.
As long as the slaves aren't Jewish.
Right, because the Jews...
a Jewish slave...
Right, is it not, right, would fall under any and every
category,
non-Kohen
right.
can eat it. But a non-Jewish slave is part of their household, part of their possessions.
Right.
Part of their property, and then they can eat it. I know. Hold.
I've got...
I can read your breath. Okay. Let's just look on page 233, second paragraph down. Any woman Kohenet, who is conjugally intimate with someone disqualified as a Kohen, is forbidden to eat truma forever after. Mm. So to a hermaphrodite, whether he was thus intimate by way of his maleness or his femaleness. So I think that's just only if he was intimate. So also with one drawn, with drawn skin. That's somebody who tried to reverse their bris.
Mm. Oh. That skin.
Yeah. Right. No, not that,
that
one.
That would hurt.
Right, but people did it.
Really?
They did not want to be, right. And I mean, a bris is something you don't get to pick. Your parents pick for you. Mm-hmm. Then somebody might grow up and say, I want to be cool like the Greeks. I don't want to be found out in the army.
That's what I was going to, I was thinking of like the Russian.
Yes.
You
right.
know.
Yeah.
Right.
Europa, the movie.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember seeing that part and how he worked on that. Right. Right, so that kind of thing. So somebody who does that is then disqualified from a lot of things.
If he had been a Kohen.
Well, if he'd been a Kohen, so he can't have Truma. Somebody who does that has other halachas attached to him, too.
Right.
Right. So, right.
Well,
so
it says
all this
very
stuff.
Clearly right here. Scratched oh, yeah. until he appears as if
yes. right. I'm sorry. Right, right. He's forbidden to eat it by decree
of
the sages.
What are those things you can't undo?
The stretching or the circumcision?
The circumcision.
You can, apparently. Yeah.
Well, it says if... It
you
says,
can make it look like it's undone.
You could, but it's...
If you do that, you have abrogated the bris. You have different halachas that apply to you. Once you've taken the initiative to make it look like you didn't get brist, then you get treated like somebody who's not brist.
So then you're treated as if you were a Gentile?
No. You're treated as a Jew... Who's not brist?
Okay.
What about if you're married? I mean, what implications is that?
With your wife, I'm not sure, but there are implications. Let's say for a Pesach Seder, you can't eat karbanos if you don't have a bris. So
if you try to undo it, even though it's physically, it's a question of appearance as opposed
right.
to
you were brist.
Undoing it,
right?
Then basically...
You're back in the category. It's almost worse. Mm. It's the worst category. Mm. Yeah. Now, the only category... It's interesting, because there is a category of male that's permitted to not have a bris. Who knows who that is?
Mm.
And we're not temporary.
Would it be a
momser? We're not talking temporary.
A momser?
Permanent.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Is it when they're sick? They have
well, but that's a temporary thing.
I think even born circumcised, you might take a drop of blood. No, the brother of a hemophiliac who died from a bris.
Oh, I think I remember we talked about that.
Okay.
That's the only one.
Right. Because, and that would be for health reasons.
Right, right.
Because the reality is
right.
you don't know.
Life.
Right.
So, but still, that brother who's permitted to not have a bris cannot eat from the Paschal sacrifice because he doesn't have a bris.
So he's
He's not brisk, but he's permitted to not
he's
be brisk.
He's permitted to not be brisk, but he does
right.
suffer
so,
some consequences
yeah, he does.
As a result.
So what if he grows up, he skins his knee, and he heals just fine?
I don't know.
Still?
Ask a Shiloh
you have such
at the time.
Good questions.
You do.
You need your own personal rabbi.
LOR.
Yeah, very creative questions. We have to do a, there should be an iPhone app instead of Siri.
That's what
we need the rabbi app, right?
Yeah. I was just thinking there needs to be a little app to ask the question.
There's going
to
be one.
I bet there is,
yeah.
Oh, is that right?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's for simple things.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Can I turn my light on and shut?
Something really simple that you really should know the answer.
That's not going to be the answer. I mean, what kind of a Jew is asking such a question? For this, you need a rabbi app? Right.
I have a question. The Kohen and his family only get truma. That's the only food they have. Is that right?
No, I don't think it's the only food they have.
Because
they can grow their own food. They can purchase their own food. Hopefully they get some tithe money. Who knows what else they're doing during the year. I don't think they serve in the temple all the time.
Well,
they have their specific weeks.
Well, there are orders.
Right, so
right.
they might have a, you know, there might be an attorney by day and Kohen by night.
They probably had to. I mean.
Yeah, they had their other things to do. It's interesting because I think that there was a tradition that during the month of Tishrei and Nisan, those people who learned full-time worked. So think Tishrei. That's when you have, that's like the nightmare for college students and people, anybody beginning a job. You want to begin it after Sukkot, not before, because it's crazy hours. What you're taking off, right? And Pesach too.
Yeah.
Right? So those are the 2 months that people who learn full-time worked to earn the money they needed to learn full-time. Which means that by working a half a month twice a year...
Yeah.
We have a very different way of living today.
Yeah. Probably wouldn't make it.
Right. So.
Well, and in those days, it was much more hand-to-mouth anyway.
Right. So it was very hand-to-mouth.
You know, right. So it's like you can't even imagine how
we,
you could.
We know from nothing.
Yeah. Right. Right, but how could we have hand-to-mouth? I mean, how could it even be hand-to-mouth?
That's
if you could
saying.
Earn enough in 2 weeks to
that's
live for
I'm
six
saying.
Months, that's,
right.
that's a lot of money. I mean, you're doing something.
Well, but maybe that was supplementing the...
Who knows, or are living very simply. Yeah.
Probably all of the above.
Right. One of the things that Esther...
You have a wife who works.
Right.
Non-stop.
It must be very lucrative to be a
cop. I'll just mention one of the things that Esther Wayne mentioned, which was just hard in the emotional processing of coming from the storm. And just, I mean, there's so much processing, and it's just such a mess over there. But she said it's so... She's just reflecting on how you must have to have a certain schus, a certain merit, to be able to direct your money, your time, and your energy into building the Jewish community. Because look at all these Jews who are using their time and their money and their energy just to restore what we had yesterday. Has nothing to do with going forward. She said, like, what is our message supposed to be? That, you know, she said, it's like, I take your car, I smash it, and then I collect tzedakah money to buy you a used car. Like, so, what are we doing here? Like, what happened to us that all of this time and all this tzedakah money? She said it took TAG, Torah Academy for Girls, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars to restore their electricity so they could open the school. So all that could have been put into programming, teacher salaries, you know,
whatever,
curriculum scholarships. Like, what are we doing? It's so heartbreaking. So that's just part of the processing. I just thought I'd throw that out there, you know, what we have.
But it also shows a lot of resilience of the people.
It has brought out a lot of chesed,
that's
for sure,
stressing
a tremendous amount of chesed. And I wonder at some point where the tshuva is going to have to come in too. I mean, tshuva for that kind of thing, but also to reflect on, you know, if we have a concept of dina de malchuta dina, the law of the state is the law. And the governor said, evacuate. And people didn't. And then they had to be rescued.
Yeah, that's yeah.
And dangerous rescues.
Yeah. Right. I think that's a problem.
Yeah,
it is.
It is. That people, I mean, we're very much into being able to sort of decide for yourself these things.
Right.
But
I mean, I lived there. I don't know if I probably would have left.
Should they have to pay for their rescues?
Right. So I lived there, and I know what it's like during the hurricanes or during the big storms. The surfers come to Long Beach because the waves are great. Right. So it's a destination, not a place you leave. And maybe your basement's going to flood a little bit. We had a curb in front of our driveway so that the water couldn't slide down, and we escaped flooding that way. But everybody else flooded on a regular basis, especially if there was a lot of rain at high tide so that the storm drains were
full,
right? So then there was flooding, and it was just regular. It happened a lot. You're used to it. You know what to not keep in the basement. Like, you flood. Right, and it's frustrating. Your carpets that you just put in are flooded again.
Well, you probably have a sump pump. And
you have sump pumps and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
But still.
But, so people have, you know, ridden through it in the past. And so that's what people were thinking.
Well, I think
been
that
there,
that's,
done that.
Right.
I could do it again.
All kinds of storms we made
through.
But it was nothing.
Every time there's
but it was
a bad
nothing
storm.
Like anybody ever
Florida,
ever experienced in the memory of anybody there.
They all say that. Oh, I did. I always stayed. Right.
But
the
you know
bad.
that might be something that they need to think about. It's that people would have to pay for the rescues, and what if somebody went in to rescue them because they're too stubborn to listen
it
to the governor,
right.
And then what if they die? And
it
it's
happens.
Like,
right.
What
right.
type of compensation would those
right.
individuals who stayed owed the family? Of
right,
the
right.
Died,
these are all questions.
Right.
And even if there's
know?
No legal answer to that, there's
what
for sure a Shamayim answer
moral.
To that.
Right, your ethical.
You know, Hashem holds people accountable for everything. Right. You know, and so my husband and I were just talking about, like, there's a time for a mitzvah, and then the time is gone. So the time for the mitzvah of evacuating comes and goes. Just like time for other mitzvahs. And then there's consequences. Either you did or you didn't, and you pay. you know, in different ways, and there's consequences. Right. So just something to think about, you know, windows open and windows close. Mm-hmm. She said one of her friends was evacuated because she was on the second floor. The water's rising. All of a sudden, she realizes that the water has filled her first floor, entire first floor. And now she realizes we're actually not safe on the second floor. Not that it's going to rise higher because it's done rising, but...
But then what?
Our second floor could become our first floor because houses are not meant to be soaked from the inside.
Right.
And as soon as all that drywall gets wet, the whole thing can just go... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then what? Mm-hmm. So people just... Nobody... thought of, and she said the fires also, the cars exploding,
see,
the transformers exploding, the burning, the explosion.
The gas, the fires.
And the electrified water, salt water.
Yeah. Sure.
With electrified
carries lines.
So then you can't even go on the water.
Mm-mm. That's what she said. That's what she was saying.
Right.
That she
so
couldn't
it was
even
petrifying,
go
the whole thing.
Down the stairs even with this much.
Right.
Because they couldn't touch the water.
And you have you effectively have no utilities in your home. You have
nothing.
No sanitation.
Oh, no.
Right, so our friends now, they need
to go to the store.
You can't buy a boiler. No. You can't buy a water heater in the East.
Yeah. Right.
All sold out.
Yeah.
There's just, you can't. There's. So, you know, that's something that's going to have to be produced
now. Maybe that's Hashem's way of during certain things that it keeps other people employed because the government can't do it.
It's a way.
You know.
There's lots of stuff to look at, but right now it's really, so we just need to daven for them.
Tile layers, concrete, you know,
anytime
all these people that will
these disasters.
Get work out of it.
So, but they're in our tefillos, so I don't want to judge anyone. Everybody should have the refuahs they need, the money they need, the energy they need, the chesed they need, the right attitude to recover and rebuild and move forward. And we shall learn what we need to learn from it.
So where are these Jewish communities? Are they in Long Island? Or
Long
Jersey?
Island, New Jersey,
Staten Island is a big community.
A lot.
Tons.
And then when they had the extra storm on top
of
them.
I know.
Right.
Last week.
Nor'easter.
It was interesting that you say that about the judgment. Because after the tsunami, I heard a lot of people being very judgmental about those people being completely decimated.
Right.
Oh, decimated.
Like in Japan.
Like wasn't it like 150,000 people?
It was.
Oh. Yeah,
The one in Japan. Right.
Actually, I was talking about
Thailand.
Tsunami.
Right.
Tsunami.
Right. Well, that was the same type thing in Japan that wiped out the.
Right.
Nuclear reactor.
And I haven't heard it a judgment because maybe so many of our own people were impacted.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, we didn't lose life
to
that extent.
Right.
But it's just interesting because it is. It's like you have to be really careful about what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like you're going to just start saying, yep, it's, you know, Mashiach is coming and it's the end of the world and these people, you know, and they believe in many gods. Like, really? Well, and are we believing in many gods? I don't think so. So what's the say? It's, you know, it's interesting.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you money more.
I mean, I have friends in Israel who say the message is clear. Get your money and get out. Sell whatever you can. It's time to make Aliyah. Don't you see?
Uh-huh.
You're living there hunkered down in these Jewish communities thinking you're safe. You're not.
That's right.
Sell your
That's
property. Take whatever you can get from the government and get out. It's time to move to Israel.
That's right.
As the rockets are flying back over.
And what was it? We just had a 4.5 earthquake. So the gematria is 9 Okay, and it affected Kentucky and 8 surrounding states. So
interesting.
That's 9 That's
oh my goodness, that's
you know?
Cute. Okay, back to the text here. Mitzvah 281. That neither a permanent nor a temporary Hebrew slave of a Kohen is to eat truma. So we just saw in the previous mitzvah that a non-Jewish slave can, and we're seeing here that that does not extend to Jewish slaves. So if you have a Hebrew slave, if a Kohen has a Hebrew slave, that they are not part of the household enough that they are permitted to eat truma, which just shows a distinction between an Eved Ivri and a non-Jewish slave. Mm. So, and we're not going there now. Okay. It's all kinds of stuff there.
Okay.
They're really, a Hebrew slave is a temporary thing. Let's see. Well, I'll just read this. The root purpose of the precept and its subject matter are included in the preceding mitzvah, 280, because the reason why they are forbidden is that they are reckoned as outsiders, as opposed to the others who are reckoned as insiders, since they are not the purchase of his money, a Hebrew slave. For the settler is, in effect, a worker hired forever until the Jubilee, while the hired servant is one hired for a number of years. So the first...
So they're not owned.
They're not owned.
Even though...
Mm-mm. Our concept of slavery is different. We use that word, which is confusing.
Mm. Yes, it is.
But they're not owned.
A non-Jewish slave can be owned.
And that, I don't think so. I think just their time is owned for a very long time.
Okay.
Yeah, they're bought until the Jubilee, and here they're just... And I don't know all the halachas of slavery, so I can't tell you. But a Jewish slave is only bought... The reason why a Jew would go into slavery, would go into this type of hired arrangement, is because they incurred a debt or stole, and thereby incurred a debt that they can't pay back.
Right.
So all they have left is their person, which they can sell to pay the debt. So let's say I'm $10,000 in debt and I can't pay it, but I can work, so in this economy, hopefully in 6 months or a year, I can pay that debt, right? So I can sell myself for a year.
For a period of time.
For a period of time to pay the debt, and then I'm out, right? And I think you might even do it a drop longer because you are released with something in your hand, unlike how we release people from prison today. I knew one guy who was released, diabetic, depression, released with no meds in his hand. I mean, like, really? Not a bottle
a
of...
Day.
Right.
Yeah.
Not a 30... It should be a 30-day supply and a prescription. Like, what? You know, how do you release somebody with depression and diabetes and they just walk out the door of the prison with no support system? Like, what are you expecting? Right? So because this was a way to rehabilitate people who got themselves into trouble financially... So you were released with something in your hand to start a life with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not slavery like American slavery. It's a whole different package. 282. That an uncircumcised person is forbidden to eat truma. So you're a kosher kohen, right? And let's just say you happen to be that hemophiliac son. You still can't eat truma, right? So here it says, this uncircumcised person that should not eat truma, i.e. a kohen who is not circumcised, whether he lives this deliberately, inadvertently, or under compulsion. For example, if his brothers died on account of circumcision, so that the fear of death has restrained him from being circumcised. Or he lives in the Soviet Union, and it can't be in the Soviet Union, there's this oppression in the land of Israel, right? So that you can't circumcise for fear of death. Or whatever it is. So whether it's by compulsion, or whether you just have a family of apikorsim, they're Kohanim apikorsim, who say, we don't circumcise, we want to look cool, right? And you're the son of that. So whether, and you take it on yourself, whether it's deliberately, inadvertently, you're just ignorant, you didn't know, right? Or... Under compulsion, you have to because, you know, of the because of the hemophiliac brothers. So any which way, you can't eat it. He's forbidden to eat any other holy food. So
isn't it considered actually more holy for somebody to go through skin or foreskin rather than to die? Because they might not be able to eat the korbanot, but they might be able, you know, they're still able to stand. You know,
oh, you're just saying to hi. I'm not sure. That's a whole different question.
Okay.
Whole different question. If you should do that in order to hide out when you need to hide.
Right.
That's a whole different question. Yeah. I'm sure that's probably better than, then you're
not
worrying about this. But that's not
to give
the
up your life. Right.
However, that being said, let me just add that in. Right, there's three reasons that you have to die before you do one of those three sins, right, of betraying Hashem, whether that's avodah zarah or betraying Hashem in some way, of illicit sexual relations or killing somebody inappropriately, not in war, but murdering, right? You have to die before you do one of those three. However, in a time of shmad, in a time of destruction, when people are trying to destroy the Jewish people and take away our identity completely, even if they say, and this is from the Gemara, where it says, even if it's just down to the color shoelaces, Jews wear purple shoelaces and non-Jews wear green, and they tell you to wear green, you have to die before you do that.
Oh, okay.
So it depends.
So
if they're trying to destroy you and they tell you, which is still different than if you're just trying to sneak by, but if they tell you specifically, especially in public, you know, you have to do this, you're not allowed to. You have to be killed before you do that.
Because it's a form of denying Hashem.
No, because it's giving up the Jewish identity, and you're not allowed to do that. We're a nation that bears a message, and part of the message that we bear is in our life. And so there was times when our life is very important, but it's not more important than our message.
Okay.
So if it gets in the way of delivering the message that Hashem is one, that Hashem rules the world, and that everything comes from and goes towards Hashem, then we have to give up our life. Our life is not. Our life is secondary to
because
that.
Because I was thinking it would be more like, you know, the Merino Jews. You know, they just don't. I mean, they
sneaking around. So yeah, exactly. there's reason to sneak around. But if somebody would have caught them in public and said, "Eat this pork," they would have to die before they do it. But if you're lost on a desert island and all there is pork, you're allowed to eat all you want, right? So that you could live. So no hoping to be marooned on desert island.
Well, the
not
coming,
worth it. Okay. 283, that a profane woman is forbidden to eat hallowed food. Let's just look at the Hebrew. Shelo tochal chalala min hakodesh. Right? Chalala. sounds like halal. Sounds like chala. It's not. Chalala. It sounds like halal, which it is. Halal. Desecration, right? Chilul Hashem. But in this case, it's a particular. A male is called a halal. A female is called a halala. That refers specifically to a kohen who has done something against their status.
Halal.
Halal with a chet. Kohen or halala, kohenet, who has done something against their status. So a kohen, male, college student, right? Who sleeps with a female non-Jew, sleeps with a male, anybody, sleeps with a female non-Jew, once he puts his bris into that usher place, he becomes a halal. And it's a real problem. A Kohen female, also, who, I don't know all the things that she can do to become a halala, but if whatever she does, she becomes a halala, you can't recover your rank. You
so
don't,
forever.
But you don't become a Yisrael. You become a halal or a halala. Wow.
What's the word? What's a different category? A
desecrated person, yeah. Profane. Here they're saying, they're translating as profaned woman, halala.
So for male, it's only applicable to Kohen?
It's only Kohen. No, it's only Kohen.
It's
female Kohen.
A female Kohen. Okay. But, and so you can't undo it?
Can't undo it. Nope.
That's harsh.
You know, there's realities of the world.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was thinking, right. I'm sitting in the NICU with Eli Sheva, and we were talking about some of the harsh things. You know, how does, she was telling me about one of her students. One of the students in her class, she has these 28 kids, English second language learners, and kids with, you know, parents in jail, or dead parents, or living with grandparents. It's like really hard situations.
Now, where is she teaching?
She teaches in a public school, Montessori, Denison Public School, first through third grade. She has one kid who's really low intelligence. He's third grade. And he doesn't remember his middle name. He doesn't remember how old he is. And he has to use a number line. He's still doing basic addition. And he has to use a number line for any number over 5. Because he recognizes the numbers. But over 5, he has to like see the number 8 and count out 8 beans and match that up with the 8 to be able to do any kind of. So he just can't. So he's low intelligence. That's not a learning disability. I mean, it might be a learning disability too, but that is significant. So anytime she tries to bring it up with the mother that he needs extra help, or she like shuts down right away. So Elisheva was just thinking, sitting in the NICU, you know, it's possible maybe the mother feels some responsibility. Maybe she took something, drank something, did something when she was pregnant that she feels responsible for, that she cannot hear it and cannot face it. You know, so how is that fair? That a child, because a mother swallowed something when she was pregnant, is affected for life. The same thing with a mamzer. How is it fair that a mother who slept with the wrong guy to get pregnant now gives birth to a child who's affected for life? There's realities. You know, there's spiritual reality and physical reality, and it's not fair necessarily. I mean, it is in the ultimate sense of everything, if we could understand everything, how Hashem runs the world, but
not in our ability.
Like, there's what happens. How is it fair that somebody's wealthy and they have a lovely mansion on the hill that didn't get flooded, and somebody's poor who lives in a basement and there's 2 feet of silt in their basement apartment?
They have nothing.
And they have nothing.
Right.
And they have nothing.
No
right?
way and no
They
way
can rebuild. And
right.
they are going to be homeless.
Right.
Are homeless. You know, like,
right.
how is it fair?
Right.
That's what happens when you live in a storm surge path. Like, it's not, there's physical realities. It doesn't have to do it. So it does seem harsh, but you do something and there's a reality. You know, you put your birth where it doesn't belong and there's a reality. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can't fix that. You can do tshuva, but you can't fix that.
Right.
You know, that is
the
permanent.
Consequences there for eternity.
Right. Let's quickly finish up here. And then number 284. Not to eat tevel. So that's all of us. Produce from which truma and the tithes are not separated. Either an Israelite, a non-Kohen, or a Kohen. So somebody who's entitled to eat truma
can't
eat from that. Nobody's allowed to eat tevel. Right, and then there's whatever consequences come from that. The purpose of the verse is to convey that holy food should not be profaned while it is yet mixed with non-holy food. This is the sense of the phrase, which they will lift off. So there's all kinds of stuff about how you take off, how you separate the trumot and masrot, and what it is. It's a whole long thing, which would be
really
interesting to go
about.
Through. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's stuff in here that's extra. But I just want to put all these together in one group of the what you can and what you can't, the tithes, what you can eat. So tevel is not something that anybody's allowed to eat from. It has to be separated first. So,
What if you didn't know?
Then it's called...
That was that other category.
Demai.
Right, that was demai. That other category.
Right.
Yeah, where you weren't sure.
Right. Demai is produce where you're not sure. Demai is the name of produce that you're not sure if it was separated from or not. So you're not allowed to eat that. You have to re-separate everything from demai. The difference would be you wouldn't make a bracha. You do make a bracha. It's a mitzvah deraisa to separate off the trumot and masrot.
So you're saying if you're in doubt, then you just go ahead and separate.
Right. If you're in doubt, you separate, but you don't make the bracha. If you're not in doubt... Right, then you can either eat it, or if it's tevil, you separate and make the bracha. But you're not permitted to eat demai without separating. You treat it like tevil, except for you don't make the bracha. Right.
And you can eat it after you've made the separation.
And you can eat either one after you make the separation, but you have to separate before you can eat it. Yeah.
You know, that's what you were saying about in different areas, and it's like if we're some places like, and there's a judgment, somebody was saying, you know, we're so lucky to live in Colorado because we really haven't had those types of things. And I was looking at them and I was wondering, it's like, are they living on a cloud? It's like, look at this past year. We've had severe thunderstorms. We have had tornadoes. We have had fires, one of the most severe droughts ever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, yes, we're just swimming. Right. We're so
at least we're not
but none of us lost our homes and everything.
We did. None
with
of us
no
lost our homes, right.
Right. With no insurance.
Right.
You know, I mean, they don't even know the insurance.
Right.
They can't get answers from insurance people
did, right.
to even know if they can rebuild to hire contractors.